And welcome back into the Bama Beat Podcast, brought to you by Zaxby's and Wickles. This is your host, Clint Lamb, sitting here once again with Brett Hudson.
By the way, Wickles, they're wickedly delicious pickles, relishes, okra, and much more. Wickles are proud to be Alabama-owned and made using a family recipe that is 90 years in the making. From Saturday sandwiches to Christmas dinner, their secret recipe used to be reserved for family and friends who were lucky enough to get a jar. But since 1998, they've been bringing the sweet heat and bold and tangy recipes to your home. Learn more about them at WicklesPickles.com and find them in your local store in the pickle aisle. Let's get wicked. You like a little spice with your pickle?
I do, actually. And I've actually had a lot of family members recently point out to me that they're huge Wickles Pickles fans. And, you know, it's just something that you don't go around probably talking about your favorite food choices all the time. But
I mean, they've become a sponsor.
Do you?
Yeah, you need to get fatter friends.
We got a healthy family. we enjoy great food. But yeah, I have found that pretty interesting that I've had, I think now, three family members reach out to me and be like, I just want to let you know, I know that you said you haven't tried, you know, Wickles Pickles, or I haven't had a chance to, because the...
I'm getting that sandwich spread eventually.
Yeah, and that's what I'm looking forward to, because I've actually, and I've had the pickles now, and I love them. And here's the thing, this female friend of mine had mentioned... Let's not do that.
Ooh.
I had a female friend.
Oh, man,
friend.
I need to break out the John Mayer song titles again.
Oh, man, I really hope she doesn't listen to this podcast.
If you haven't listened to part one, you need to, because we covered a lot of porn stuff.
Apparently, and I don't know if this is a West Coast thing. I'd never heard of it until she brought it up, and it just sounded so gross, but she convinced me to try it, and it's incredible. Pickle peanut butter sandwich. I know. I had the same reaction. I was pretty bothered by it. This was after she said that she does popcorn and ketchup.
Oh, yeah. No.
Almost ended the conversation right there. But I didn't. I brought up the fact that back in school, I was a huge fan with the rectangle pizza. This was my go-to thing, and this is going to be really weird. My brother told me about this. Judged him until I tried it as a kid. It was phenomenal. Unless I have the rectangle pizza, I won't do it. But rectangle school pizza, you take the applesauce that came with it, you put that on there, spread it as a paste, and then you sprinkle corn that also came with it. The look I'm getting is a very natural reaction. I don't blame
this,
you.
This podcast is over. I'm leaving the room. This is ridiculous. Yeah. Part one was like 45 minutes or whatever. Part two is going to be like six. Well, this is ridiculous.
I have to, yeah.
I can't be in the same room as you right now.
And the funny part about it is...
What's wrong with
here,
you?
I was sitting here, not even going to lie, judging her so hardcore for popcorn and ketchup.
When you put applesauce and corn on your pizza?
And then I thought about that, and I thought, man, you know what? And that's a little piece of heaven to me. That holds a real dear place in my heart, and I haven't had it in forever, but I loved it when I was younger. And so I'm like, I'm not going to knock this. So I tried the pickle and peanut butter sandwich. Pretty good. I was very surprised. So you're going to have to give me some Wickles and slap that on us, you know, because I'm going to bring it to studio, and I'm going to have you try it. Because I was blown away. Still got the jar of Wickles at home. Phenomenal. You're going to have to try it. So, time to talk a little Alabama football.
We need to talk about this ketchup on popcorn debacle.
Which, you know what? Out of all of them, that's the one that got me too. You know, all this applesauce pizza stuff. Sure.
You're a disgusting human being. That's been established.
Popcorn ketchup. Yeah. That's... Give me your thoughts. Because that's the first thing that she brought up that was very strange. And I was like, wait a minute. Popcorn and ketchup. Never in my life... That's just a normal, everyday snack. Now, I do have a friend from high school who I played football with. He took the fudge rounds, and he would put a piece of sliced cheese together with it. And I always thought he was a psychopath for that, too. So, in fact, people's got some weird eating habits. Guys, if you have a weird eating habit, drop it in the comment section on... The you know, either mine or Brett Hudson's timeline. We'll talk about it next week on the podcast.
He's at Clint R. Lamb. I'm at Brett _Hudson. I need to get this lovely young lady on the podcast, because this whole popcorn on ketchup thing is
it's
a debacle.
How does that happen? Is my question.
So I'm curious. We're gonna spend way too much time on this. I'm curious. Like, is it Is it dipped in the ketchup?
Good question.
Or are you like spraying like from a squeeze bottle at a restaurant ketchup on your popcorn? Because then you're messing with the crunch and the consistency.
Yeah, because you feel like sits on there, it's going to be a little soggy.
Yeah, like butter's going to go through and kind of sit on top, but ketchup is going to like congeal. Is that the right word? And like kind of really like get into your popcorn and mess with the crunch. This is so wrong to me.
And you know
I hate this.
I've always been one of those kind of
people. I'm not going to eat for 3 days.
I've always been one of those kind of people that I say, okay, this sounds really, really gross to me. But I'll try it because, you know, like I said, the pickle peanut butter sandwich, I was like, man, I'm not doing this. She convinced me to try it. Told her, but she has to try the pizza now. I don't know where we're going to find this rectangle pizza. But this is going to have to happen because, you know.
My favorite part of this is that it has to be rectangular.
Oh, it's got to. It's got to be the school pizza. You know what I'm talking about.
I know what you're talking about, but the shape of the pizza doesn't impact how applesauce and corn.
I just feel like a triangular slice of pizza. It just, like, I'm trying to imagine, like, Pizza Hut or Papa John's or something with applesauce and corn. To me, that still sounds disgusting, and I loved it, but school pizza is different. I don't know.
Again, I'm sure this wonderful young woman's eating habits give me split-screen sadness.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I did it.
Do you have a list of John Mayer songs pulled up on your laptop right now?
I can neither confirm nor deny that rumor.
I knew it. That's... I don't even know what to say right now.
This conversation is leaving me in repair.
Shadow days.
Dreaming with a broken heart.
Oh, my God. By the way, for all the podcast listeners who have wasted 7 minutes of their life and not getting back, listening to us up to this point.
All right, so yeah, seriously, we need to get to football. So if you haven't listened to part one, go back and do it because you should.
It's going
to
matter.
It is. It's actually important because we covered how Georgia is an abomination to...
You were so nice about that, by the way.
Really?
You handled that extremely well.
Well, facts only, man. I don't have to get red-faced or whatever. It's just facts. Anyway, we covered that, and we dove into the playoff rankings, Bama being 13, Georgia being 5, how you can argue that's problematic, and all of that. But that conversation was spurred by the dumpster fire that is my mentions. Mentioned that on part one. And also part one said we would get into the rest of the dumpster fire that has been those mentions. And the two things that have been the most prominent in that rolling dumpster are the players that might skip the bowl game for very obvious reasons and the value of these bowl games as a whole. And the two kind of go hand in hand. Since this is a two-parter, the previous week after the Iron Bowl, we kind of discussed how if players skip the bowl game, it would actually be a good thing for Alabama as it looks towards the future. And Saban actually said that on a teleconference after the Citrus Bowl announcement. He said they haven't had the individual conversations with players yet, and they're going to make their individual decisions. But the program is focused on the future and players that want to improve and players that are looking for the future of the program. So that's where the program's future is going to lie. That's where its focus is going to lie. And that's we discussed how that could be a good thing if some of these guys sit. But that conversation has continued on, and the takes have been bombastic. Everything from the NCAA and the NFL are ruining college football because this is happening. And I even had one take that insinuated that injuries are less likely in bowl games for some reason. That was hilarious to me. He basically referenced how he can't remember a significant bowl game injury since Colt McCoy.
Jalen Smith.
Jake Butt.
I was going to be the next one. I mean, you're talking about two that permanently, granted, Jalen Smith back to 100%, playing phenomenal football for the Dallas Cowboys. Think he just earned a big-time contract extension, if I'm not mistaken. Great for him. He'll never get that money back on the front end. He was a top 10 pick in the NFL draft. Falls to the second round. Two is going to be dealing with the same sort of decision. That's a lot of money. 10 plus million. And yeah, probably more than that.
So anyway, there's a lot going on in the mentions, and people are clearly interested in it. So I wanted to discuss it a little bit further. And I said the last time we brought this up, I don't think it's fair to project on personal decisions, like especially like this one, or try to predict what's going to happen, because I don't think people always grasp how emotional of a decision this can be for players, because when you're at a college program as big as Alabama, and the effort and the time that it requires to be as good as Alabama is and do things, excuse me, by the quote unquote Bama standard, right? These people become your family.
Absolutely.
You see them infinitely more than you do your actual families. You're with these people. You might as well live with them, and in a lot of cases they do, as roommates, right? You're hanging out with these people all the time. They are your family for anywhere from 3 to 5 years, or maybe Joshua McMillan's case, 6 years if he gets that medical red shirt. Yeah. So it's hard for them, because they're basically put between their two families, their college family. They love these people. They love their coaches. They love their teammates. In some cases, they love their university, and they want one more opportunity to do the thing with them. But some of them are coming from, I think we've all heard these stories over the years, just awe-inspiringly terrible upbringings, coming from really tough situations. And again, I think we've all heard the stories. I don't think I have to go into it, but they're stuck between their football families, the people that have been their families for the last 3 to 5 years, and if you include the years of recruiting before that, maybe a little bit more, and the families that many of them are kind of tasked with supporting financially. Like there are a lot of players out there that want to get to the NFL, not for the status of being in the NFL, not to play on Sundays and be on national television every week.
It can't get much better than Alabama in that regard.
Exactly. They want to get to the NFL to get that money, to get life-changing, generational money. Tens of millions of dollars can change the trajectory of the last name forever, if not, at the very least, multiple generations. So it's a really emotional decision for them to make, and I don't want to project, but it's difficult for them. And
Mac Wilson being a perfect example of that.
Yes.
Because he specifically said, I wanted to leave early to take care of my mom. And granted, he was not expecting a draft day fall like he took to the 5th round. But, you know, and that, of course, cost him a lot of money. And if he had that decision to do over, knowing that, he might have stuck around in Alabama. But he couldn't have known that at the time. I think he got bad information. But he specifically said, I wanted to go ahead and get to the NFL to help take care of my mom. These kids, they get treated like royalty in Alabama. They get free meals. They get a roof over their head. They don't have to worry, but that their family at home aren't getting all those things. So it's difficult, and you can't go work a job to send money home to your family, because your school, football,
that's another thing. Like they don't have time to go wait tables. Like that's what I did in college.
Exactly.
I went and waited tables at Baumhauer's to buy my wife's engagement ring.
Yeah.
Like I had that opportunity. I had to do a lot of work on the side, because that's what you do as a journalism major. But I had that opportunity. Football players don't.
Exactly. So I completely agree with you.
It's a very emotional decision. It's very difficult. And my personal stance on it is I'm probably not going to criticize someone either way.
No.
That's just what I'm going to do. Like if somebody wants to rock with that Alabama football family one more time, that's great, man. You're doing what you want to do. That's great. If somebody wants to make sure or do everything they can to protect their future value and potentially change their actual biological family's future for generations with tens of billions of dollars. I didn't mean to say B. I kind of stumbled on my words there. Tens of millions of dollars. That's perfectly fine too, man. Do your thing. I'm just going to let them make their decisions and move on. That's where I'm going to be.
I completely agree. And here's the thing. I got multiple texts, direct messages, tweets about this same topic. So I'll go ahead and cover it, because anytime Alabama fans are talking heavily about something, I at least want to try to get it on the podcast. Now, here's the thing. I know with Cecil, and I've learned a lot from Cecil during...
Don't we all?
Yeah. During my time since joining the Bama Beat podcast, but
brought to you by Zaxby's and Wickles.
Nicely done.
Sup? But
one of the big things that I've learned from Cecil, and I think that it's something that I've kind of evolved from, is I try not to speculate as much anymore. It's always just my thoughts, how I think, the reasons behind, you know. But what I've learned is, hey, sometimes it's just better not to speculate. And so I will, but I will at least address this because I know people are wondering. The Tua Tagovailoa players only meeting that Kirk Herbstreit was talking about. We don't have any clue what that had to do with. It could be a lot of different things. I'm not going to sit here and speculate on what I think it was. Some of the scenarios that people have painted, simply trying to determine which guys are going to come out and which guys aren't. There's rumors that maybe there's some guys on Alabama's team that want to have one last hurrah with Alabama. There's been some speculation that it was Tua trying to convince some guys to come back for another season with him. There's so many different scenarios on why this meeting took place. We're not going to try to, you know, get some kind of rumor started on the, oh, we think this is what it is. We have no clue.
Well, if nothing else, because, like, and this is where the divide between the fan and the journalist is at its most drastic, because there's actually ramifications or consequences or significance when we do that without, like, actual information.
Yeah, because people
will run with it. Fans can do that. Fans can just fire out a tweet and at whoever they want with their theories, and there's no accountability. There is accountability for us, or at least there should be. There should be. Not everyone behaves that way in the quote-unquote fake news media, but we try to. I just don't know. I'm not very interested in delving into that, but that's kind of my thoughts on it. And again, you can think whatever you want to think. I'm not telling you how to think, but that's where I'm at. I'm just going to let them make their decision and do what's best for them. If they want to come back to Alabama, I'll certainly enjoy watching their immense talents on every fall Saturday in 2020. And if they want to go to the NFL, well, I'm not a big NFL guy, so I'll forget about them, but it makes room for the future. So
yeah, and you know, I just think that it's not going to happen, but I think in an ideal world, people put themselves in other people's shoes. You know, from the average fan's perspective, Mack Wilson declaring probably when he shouldn't have really bummed you out. That creates a hole on your defense that needs to be filled. It hurts your projections for the next season. Obviously, we saw how that ended up playing out on the field with the injury to Dylan Moses as well. You know, Deontay Thompson being another one. But you're looking at it because it hurts your own individual enjoyment level watching Alabama football. These guys are making decisions not based off of your necessary enjoyment watching football. It's, you know, and these, the people that are making the complaints in a lot of cases would do the same thing, which is go take care of their family. Unless they were in a position financially where they didn't have to go to the NFL to help take care of their families back home and things like that.
We're playing with Monopoly money.
Yes.
Like we can look at this and say 10 million, 5 million, whatever. For them, like, it's on their fingertips.
Right.
It's right there.
Right.
Like that check is just needing the last comma or the last period in the 00 at the end to get thrown into their checking account.
Right.
Millions of dollars. It is at their fingertips. And man, dude, if people are willing to stampede grown men and grown women at Best Buy to get a Black Friday TV for $200 off, imagine what you might be willing to do to have $4 million thrown into your checking account immediately.
Great point.
It is on their fingertips, man. And average people, myself included, yourself included, we have no context on what that's like.
We
have no way of knowing what it's like to be that close to millions of dollars.
And we're both, you know, I'm closing in on 30. I don't know where you're
at. I'm 27.
All right, so yeah, you're 27.
I am.
So you're a lot closer. You know, maybe not as close as I am, but you know, closing in on that 30 age mark.
I'm also about to have twin girls, so
right.
I'm a lot further away in life than the average college student.
So, you know, we're in a position in our lives where we can...
I'm about to have daughters, by the way.
Yeah. Which, you know, twin daughters.
No, I'm about to have daughters. Quotations around the word daughters.
No, don't do that.
Yeah, I did it.
What have I done? What was I even saying? Oh, yeah, okay.
That's got to be like 10, including part one, because part one had like 7 in the first.
Next week, I'm going to have a list of John Mayer songs up in front of me, and the puns are going to be absolutely terrible, cringeworthy puns.
Your home life doesn't sound very exciting.
Don't do this to me.
That's Brett. Another one, baby. Killing it.
Okay. So anyways, we're in a position in our lives, and just like a lot of the people that criticize a guy like Mac Jones or Deontay Thompson for coming out early, they're making money to be able to live and do the things that they enjoy doing. They might not make tons of money. I'm not saying that they do, but these kids are in college. When I was in college, if you would have floated $5,000 a year in front of me, I would have been like, well, at this point, you know, there's a lot of things you'll be willing to do for $5,000.
Let go.
Yeah. You talking about millions? Bro.
Man.
I mean, yeah. So
I'll drop out. What's up?
Yeah. Point is, people, they're at a very different point in their lives than a guy like Mac Wilson and Deontay Thompson being college kids, not having the chance to make a lot of money. So that's kind of the point that I was getting at. Now, before, you know, we kind of been in this podcast for a little while. Granted, a lot of that had to do with food takes. Alabama, Michigan, Citrus Bowl, January 1st.
Oh, really?
Orlando, Florida.
That's the first I'm hearing of this.
Yes. I actually, thank goodness, I feel like there was very few teams that could really not save Alabama's bowl game, and but it's enough to keep people relatively interested.
Is it, though?
I would hope so. I mean, in comparison to what Memphis, again, Cincinnati, Minnesota, like if Auburn's playing Minnesota, granted, they're ranked higher than Michigan. But Minnesota, to me, I would just much rather just the brand Michigan. Yeah. I think someone on ESPN referred to it as a uniform game or something.
Yeah.
Very
it's all the same.
Eye-appealing uniforms and helmets.
The tradition and the pageantry.
This will be interesting. I don't know if they've come out with lines on these yet.
Yes. I'll pull one up while you're finishing your point.
One thing that we do know, outside of, you know, some sort of injury, Shea Patterson is going to be the starting quarterback for Michigan in this game.
Well, that name sounds familiar.
Yes, it does. Why? Because he was at Ole Miss. When he was at Ole Miss, did not have a great one performance against Alabama. Completed less than 50% of his passes. Threw 2 interceptions. Averaged, I think, 5.7 yards per attempt. You have Alabama running backs averaging more than that. He did not have his best game. And, you can point to youth. That is fair. You can't point to being surrounded by a ton more talent. He had guys like Greg Little at left tackle. He had guys like DK Metcalf, Van Jefferson, AJ Brown,
yes.
Dawson Knox. Granted, I don't know if Dawson Knox was really a thing a couple years ago. It might have not been. But point being, he had weapons.
Alabama's favored by 7 on Vegas Insider's consensus, by the way.
And to me, it would be a lot bigger, except for the fact that we don't know who's sitting out.
Yes.
And we don't know Alabama's motivation level
for
a game like this.
Well, and that kind of goes to something I wanted to discuss. People are, like, I'm just going to take this tweet from Jeremy at J_Kyle007 on Twitter. So sad.
Solid handle, by the way.
Yeah. So sad that bowl games have come to this. Saban was right when he said every bowl game outside of the CFP will lose value. And there have been several takes to that effect. He's just literally at the top of my mentions column on TweetDeck, so I used him as the example. And I don't necessarily disagree. I think the value of these bowl games has dropped. But I have a hot take on this subject, and I wonder where you fall on this. This is very atypical for me because I'm not this guy very often, but I think in this case it's applicable. I think a lot of this is ESPN's fault.
Elaborate, because I'm very intrigued by this.
ESPN, for better or for worse, often for better because they've got good talent and some smart thinkers there, they drive the narrative of college football. College game day drives the narrative of college football because it's arguably one of the best sports talk television shows to ever exist.
Completely agree.
There's no debate. Ask media experts and they'll tell you the same thing. It's up there with Inside the NBA on TNT, right? They set the narrative And they spend all their time talking about the playoff. And as someone who eats the whole hog of college football, right? Like, I'm, if you were to break into my house at 8 o'clock on a Saturday night, I might be watching Ohio State play a Big Ten team on ABC. I might be watching App State play Coastal Carolina on ESPNU or ESPN Plus. Like, you never know. That's kind of where I live, and that playoff centric mindset drives me crazy, because every now and then, it happens a few times a year, I'll have game day on in the background while I'm doing some nonsense on Twitter probably, and you'll hear somebody say, I'm just going to make up an example, oh, Charlotte is having a really under the radar year, starting off 6-1, and I just like stomp my feet on my living room floor and say, you're blamed for that. That's your fault. Because you drive the narrative for college football, and you know that about yourself. Don't act like it's not true. And you are the one that perpetuates this playoff-centric mentality. And to a certain extent, like, fans can do whatever they want. They're independent thinkers, although not all the time. So ESPN and College Game Day aren't solely to blame for this. But there is a lot of blame to go on their shoulders, in my opinion, when everything is about the playoff. And to a certain extent, I get it. Like, they have all the TV rights for the playoff. They got to drive their big market property because they're paying just buku dollars to get that thing. And you got to maximize the ratings. I understand that. But they are responsible for a part of this in how they frame the conversation of the sport. There are so many interesting things going on in the sport of college football, but all we seem to talk about is the playoff for a lot of reasons. But so to get back to the point, I do agree that the bowls outside of the college football playoff have seen their value wane. And for that exact reason, what do you think of that?
No, I completely agree. And I think that before, you could go undefeated and get left out of the national championship.
We Auburn saw 2004.
That. Yeah. So it's a strange situation to be in. But when you're trying to, what happens is, if you're in the playoff, you're still in the national championship conversation. And that's four teams still trying to win it compared to two. And you have an entire month to get hyped, you know, 3 to 4 weeks to get hyped for this sort of game. I think that is, right now, you don't just have Ohio State and LSU fans getting hyped for this game. You also have Clemson fans. You also have Oklahoma fans. I think that plays a part, a much bigger, and there were so many teams still involved in the conversation for so much of the season. Minnesota even drops a game. Hey, all we got to do is still win the Big Ten, and we're still in. At what point will we have determined essentially who the national championship is probably going to be? I mean, granted, you still would have Clemson involved in there as well. But once it hit three teams left that were undefeated, that's it. You know that all these other – as soon as your team suffered a loss back then, in most cases you were done.
Notre Dame is the perfect example of this. They took that loss to Georgia, and they fell completely off the map.
Yes.
And then they took the loss to Michigan, and they fell completely off the map. But they're still – what were they in the final rankings? They were in the top 15, weren't they? Yeah, they were number 15. But they fall completely off the map because they're not involved in the college football playoff selection committee.
And, you know, before,
or at least in the Final Four conversation.
Before, you know, from I'll use these guys as an example, which is Alabama, of course. Fans, until the last week of the regular season, they still had a chance at the college football playoff.
Yep.
They had a vested interest in keeping up with national championship implications. Before, that would have ended probably at LSU several weeks prior. So it just, these teams that suffer early losses, you know, Alabama, when they got beat by Ole Miss, you know, that didn't mean the season was over per se. Used to, when you lose to a team like Ole Miss back like they did in 2014, that ends everything. All you start doing is prepping yourself mentally for a bowl game.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the entire season to prep for that. You get what I'm saying? It's
yes.
a different mentality where the letdown is always right here at the end for so many teams. Like even teams like Penn State.
Another good example.
Yeah, there was potential. A lot of chaos would have to happen, but they weren't out of it. There was a vested interest in keeping up with everything that was going on with all these other games. And then it's like, oh, man, we didn't make it right here at the end for a huge chunk in comparison of fan bases and all with all your major programs. I think that's a huge difference and adds to it as well.
Yeah. No, so. You're right. So I think to get at the root of – of the topic, yes, these bowl games aren't as significant as they used to be before the playoff era for a lot of reasons. And I mean, as someone who takes interest in the whole hog, to steal the Bill Connolly and Stephen Godfrey line, the whole hog of college football, I don't let that really impact my enjoyment of what else is going on in the sport. Like, when's the last time you heard someone talk about Air Force?
Yeah.
Do you know what's happening at Air Force right now?
They're top 25. I know that.
They're 10-2.
Yep.
They beat Army. They beat Utah State. They beat Hawaii, who went to the Mountain West title game. They almost beat Boise, who won the Mountain West title game. Their only losses are to Boise and Navy, mm-hmm. two top 25 teams. They beat Colorado. Beat Utah State. I mentioned that earlier. They're a good football team.
Yeah.
But nobody's talking about them. I don't know, man.
I completely agree.
It frustrates me when things like this happen. And for fans to be frustrated with it, I get it. Not only frustrated with it because Bama isn't in the playoff where they're frankly used to being, but also frustrated that this bowl game doesn't mean what it used to mean or what it would have meant 10 years ago.
And to me, that right there is why, in my opinion, they need to expand the playoffs. It's not...
Oh, I disagree, but I'll hear you out.
And because a lot of people, they take it, oh, you know, we don't know who that number... This is the perfect example of you are arguing who deserves to be that number four, get that number four spot at the end of the season. Oklahoma ended up being it because they were a conference champion with only one loss. There are a lot of people's like, they're not even in the same ballpark as some of these other teams. So from that perspective, this was the perfect example of why an 8-team playoff is not needed.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yes, I agree.
So, yes. So
that's my exact point. Like,
yes.
We don't have 8 teams that are worthy of a national championship consideration
and
right now. So
from
why do
that
we need to
angle,
include
me? I completely agree. So the people that are taking that, like, oh, you know, because a few weeks ago, it's like, oh, Utah deserves a chance. Oregon deserves a chance. Alabama deserves a chance. Oklahoma, they definitely need an 8-team playoff. Well, look how things actually ended up shaking out by the end. You had a hard time getting 4 in that truly deserved to be in there. But if now it's playoff or bust, you keep a lot more teams involved and excited later on into the season if you have more teams getting in. Like if you had 4 more teams right now getting in, Alabama probably still at this point being number 13. Would they be one of those 8 teams? I don't know. But what you would have is a 4 more fan bases who still have national championship hopes. They're saying, we're in. We still have a shot at this. Plus, you have the topic being driven. I mean, for essentially the top 10 teams in the country, they all still have a chance. To me, if you're going to have it to where the playoffs mean so much where if you don't make the playoffs, it's like season's over. I don't even want to play in a bowl. I mean, a lot of Bama fans are saying that. Don't even want to see that. Don't care. Now, when push comes to shove, they'll enjoy watching Alabama when the time comes. But still, if you're going to have the playoffs mean this much where it's playoff or bust, my opinion, need to try to get more playoff teams in there to keep people interested in it longer.
So I have two rebuttals. I agree with you that we don't need an 8-team playoff. The first rebuttal would be, it doesn't have to be this way. It doesn't have to be playoff or bust. It doesn't have to be where all of these other bowl games mean absolutely nothing. But
how do you change that now that that's become the narrative?
By just being better. By just not doing it, right?
So you think... So
I mean, it doesn't have to be this way. It doesn't have to.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. But now that it's here, it's like, how do you reverse what's happened? That's what I struggle. Alabama fans from now until the end of time, regardless of if ESPN starts playing up the Sugar Bowl a lot more, you know, Alabama, if they don't make the national the playoff, they're still going to look at it. I don't care that we're playing in the Sugar.
I don't know, man. I think ESPN has a lot of power here.
You think so?
They drive narrative, don't they?
Well, they do, yeah. But now that you've kind of put this narrative out there, that it's just very hard to say, oh, it didn't matter 2 years ago. We've driven this narrative for that it's playoff or bust, but now it matters.
We also had a defense wins championships narrative.
Which is true, and things do change over time.
Go back to part one.
I would. So, are you saying that you would you go back to... You would leave it at four. Right?
I would absolutely leave it at four.
So not go back to like a BCS type.
No, and the reason I'm not a big fan of eight, and that goes to my second point I want to make here. If we went to eight, it would almost certainly be the winners of the Power Five conference championship games get in, plus a group of five representative to at largest, right? That would almost certainly happen. The reason I'm not a big fan of that is what happens if, and this hasn't happened in a few years, so we're clearly due for it. What happens if I'm going to make up an example here. What happens if a 8-4 Arizona State team beats an 11-1 Oregon team? Then we're stuck with this nonsense 8-4 Arizona State team in the playoff. We don't want that.
Well, agreed. And it's what makes college football special to some degree. So I don't want to – you got a potential – what someone said, I think, the Cowboys can go 6-10 or 7.
It would be 6-10 or 7.
7-9 and still make the playoffs because they can win their division.
Didn't the Seahawks make it at 7-9 that 1 year?
Yeah. And ended up, I think, beating the Saints.
Yes. The Marshawn Lynch Skittles game, right?
Yes, absolutely. But then you can have a terrible SEC team in college basketball all season. If they win the SEC tournament, they're an automatic bid. But in
basketball, it's different because all of those conferences, the Big Sky and the MEAC and the MAAC and the WAC and all these other conferences get a bid, not because they're considered actual national championship contenders, but we're rewarding their success with a berth in the field of now 68.
Yes.
Do we want college football to become that?
And that isn't
the leading question that Nick Saban asked a few years ago when he said, is this what we want college football to become? When in the back of his head he was saying, okay, I'm going to do it and beat you at it. That's an honest to God question. Do we want college football to become that? Do we want college football to become – to have that kind of postseason where we just reward success – to any degree, whether it's actually beneficial for deciding the national champion or not? That's an honest question for fans of the sport. Do we want it to become that?
Which I completely agree. To me,
and I think it's hard for it to become that, by the way, because you're adding more games.
You're adding more
games to the workload, and that's problematic for a lot of reasons.
If you make it to where eight teams get in the playoffs, the one loss at that point means very little. It's like, okay, probably don't need to get two losses, but this one loss, I mean, we're almost guaranteed to still get in, you know, especially if you win your conference. But if you're a team like Alabama, that loss against LSU does not get hyped up nearly as much prior to, especially, because it's like regardless of which team loses this, as long as they don't lose anything else, they're both getting in. Now, you could make the same argument that with a 14 playoff, that was going to be the case. But that was not guaranteed at that time. Some things were going to
Alabama,
happen.
We had the conversation before the Iron Bowl. Alabama had to be unequivocally better than both Oklahoma and Utah to get in without
exactly.
one loss.
Exactly. So, you know, while there would be people that pushed that it was kind of the same way as it was not in most situations. So
Ohio State lost once and didn't get in twice.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, the one loss – the individual game would mean less. If even Georgia drops a game to South Carolina like they did, it's like that means nothing at this point. Even if you lose to a really bad team, if you just have the one loss, you're fine.
Unless you lose to them by 30, like Ohio State did.
Well, I'm saying that there was an 8-team playoff.
I see.
Yeah, so like so you would diminish the fact that Georgia's like,
because if
we're
you had
big,
the
8-team
playoff and you go to that system that I'm assuming we'll get to because conference commissioners are going to fight for it and they're going to try to make more money off of their respective conference championship games, make that huge paycheck that the SEC makes off of theirs, all that matters is the conference championship game.
Yes.
You're probably going to lose elite non-conference scheduling. Because there are still two at-large bids, but there are five conference championship bids.
Yes.
So all you got to do is win your division and then win that one game to get into Big Dance.
Yeah.
You're liable to lose big non-conference scheduling. And a lot of that is already booked through like the early 2030s or whatever, so we're not going to lose it anytime soon if they go to eight in the near future, but you're liable to lose it going beyond that for the next generation of games.
Well, and I'll say this, and what I'm doing is I'm just throwing out, because these are thoughts that I have, and I, like I said, I do feel like there are benefits to an 18 playoff, but I completely understand for those that don't want to go to it. But yes, it's very possible that an 8-4 Arizona State gets into the playoff because they end up winning their conference. I totally get that.
Wisconsin went to the Rose Bowl 7-5 one year.
Yes. And so that kind of situation can probably happen and probably would happen at some point. Granted, so in the first round, what happens? They get blown out by the number one seed by doing that?
They get absolutely ransacked, yes.
So it's no different than most of the teams in the first. Someone gets blown out every year in the first round with four teams. So you see a terrible football game, regardless. But what it does do is it puts those teams that are 10-2 or 11-2 or something like that, it allows those who are – everybody, I think, pretty much agrees Alabama is a top – as far as, not resume, but if you said strictly eye test, you had to ask people, most people say Alabama is probably at least a top 5-6 team in the country. So they
let's drop it down to 9 to be safe. Top 9.
Okay. Well, my point being, if there was an 18 playoff and Alabama was the number 8 seed, do you think Alabama would have a good chance to advance pretty far in it?
Sure.
I would say as long as they didn't end up meeting,
sure.
Which if they were the 8th seed, they'd play LSU or Ohio State or Clemson. But my point being, if you can honestly say Alabama is a legit playoff contender if they were to get into an 18 playoff. So you're going to get good football at some point. Whoever Alabama is up playing, even if it's LSU again, if you have that Alabama-LSU rematch, that level of game in a 18 playoff, it's a very exciting football game that people are like really glad I got to watch that. So you might have that blowout that we get anyways if some team squeaks in. You might have a couple, two of the, four games that end up happening could end up being blowout losses. But in the grand scheme of everything, I think that you would get a lot more football and it would be beneficial. But
to tie back to the thing that started this whole conversation, you get that really good game between two top 8 teams, two top 10 teams, whatever, you get it in the Sugar Bowl.
Yeah.
You get it in the Rose Bowl.
Yeah.
You get it in the Cotton Bowl, well, Memphis, but whatever. You get it in these bowl games, you get it in the Orange Bowl. Why can't you be excited about it?
Yeah. Well, and
you can be excited about it even if it doesn't impact the national championship picture. ESPN.
Agreed. And I don't disagree with that at all. I think and ESPN does drive that, so I agree with that as well. But in the minds of fans, it's like no matter how good everybody said the biggest disappointing team in the Nick Saban era was 2010. Dropped 3 games, absolutely destroyed Michigan State in the Capital One Bowl.
Bloodletting.
People were like, that was so unfortunate that they had dropped the games they did because they were one of the best teams in the country. And it's very unfortunate. As good as they weren't national champions. Like, that's a team that it wasn't considered a good season. Should it have been? Maybe. But it wasn't.
But
Because of the, the fact that they were a national championship caliber team that didn't get into the national championship. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I don't know. There's so many layers to this, and there's always unintended consequences when you do anything. Nick Saban was trying to point out what these consequences were going to be with going to a playoff, and he said the more you continue to add to it, it's going to continue to diminish other bowl games. That's going to be one consequence that I think a lot of people see coming. There's going to be some other stuff that ends up happening, just like the transfer portal, just like anything, stuff that – so, yeah, that stuff matters.
Even with the 4-game redshirt rule, there have been unintended consequences. This is
absolutely
where we shout out to Eric King.
Yeah, absolutely. Great point. I mean, there's going to be – with any major changes like this, there's going to be unintended consequences. And how much does that impact your sport? Once you've diminished bowl games, like they kind of already have in some ways, like I said, I think it's hard to get back to a point where they really mean something.
You make a good point there. It probably is.
So we'll have to see. This is the other thing. I noticed something, and I don't know why I didn't notice this before. I don't know if they talked about it or whatever, but I wanted to get your thoughts, since it's the last thing we'll talk about. We've already kind of ran long, but I noticed that the first round of the playoff games are on December 28th this year.
And the national championship game isn't until like April.
Yeah, it's January like
13th or 13th, something, right? It's crazy. I'll look it up. Go ahead and finish your point.
Was that not crazy to you?
That is weird, isn't it?
That's like more than 2 weeks. That's what, 16 days?
The national championship game is on January 13th.
So that's 16 days post. That's more than a week and, you know, 2 weeks and 2 days.
I mean, doesn't it have to be on a Monday, though?
Oh, it does, which is why that.
So it would either be on the 6th or the 13th, and maybe you didn't want to go from the 28th to the 6th.
Well, but see, before it would be like, you know, last year, I think the...
But that would have been nine
playoff,
days.
Well, the playoff last year, I think, was on January 1st, and then the national championship was on like January 8th or 9th or 7th. So, but here's my point.
I don't know, man.
What's unfortunate, I've always felt like Nick Saban, when you gave him several weeks to prepare for an opponent, look at what Alabama does in the first round. They destroy opponents in most cases because he's had tons of time to really dive in and analyze everything about that opponent, and they've always looked outside of Ohio State in 2014, whether it's preparing for bowl games, whether it's preparing for bowl games that they wanted to be in, that, you know, we could talk about that too, but irrelevant in some ways. National championships where they had a month to prepare back in the BCS era, playoff first round games, bowl games that they played in a lot of cases. Nick Saban and Alabama came out firing, but then the next week, having just 1 week after that to prepare, they haven't been nearly as effective. Them switching to this sort of setup, I think if you would have given Alabama the 3 weeks to prepare for one opponent and then turn around giving them 16 days to prepare for the national championship, based off of what we've known about Nick Saban and the way he operates, I think that would have really helped Alabama.
That's interesting.
Have a good shot at, not because everybody says, oh, if they get into the playoffs, they get destroyed by really any one of those other three teams, and it's very possible. But we've just have always seen Nick Saban gets a lot of time to prepare for a team he normally does pretty well. So
no, it's a good point. I hadn't thought about it.
Yeah, so I just, when I saw the gap, I was like, man, where could that have been last year? Giving Nick Saban and that coaching staff an extra week to not only get guys like Christian Miller healthy, because he was a game time decision, but to also kind of prepare for Trevor Lawrence in that passing game after having to try to prepare, you know, spending a month essentially on Kyler Murray. Now, of course, they spent some time on the other opponents during that huge gap, but I just thought that was interesting and worth bringing up.
No, it had not come to mind.
Yeah, it's so, the first thing I thought of. But
that's interesting. I'm sure people have thoughts on that, and if you do, tweet them at Clint R. Lamb.
Yeah, I would be very interested to hear. And I mean, somebody might be like, oh, you know, point something out to me that I don't realize. But just when I first saw that, when I was going through the bowl matchups last night, I thought, I've never seen it where there was 2 weeks to prepare for the national championship after the playoffs.
I think the most likely counterpoint is going to be Bama's undoing in that game wasn't to do with preparation time, but more to do with the obvious attrition that was kind of percolating within the program at that point in time. That's been reported on.
Yeah.
Between then and now.
Yeah. And that's certainly, it's a lot of what ifs, don't know what would
happen. But maybe the extra time allows them to kind of get the house in order.
Yeah.
In time to prepare for the game a little bit better. I don't know. I'm just speculating.
What do you think happens if Alabama has 2 weeks to prepare Steve Sarkisian for Clemson when he took over for Lane Kiffin a few years ago compared to just a week? You know,
probably makes a difference.
Somewhat, I would say so, because he had a week to prepare, hadn't been calling plays, was just only involved in the offensive game planning. Said, you know what, I don't have a whole lot of time. Bo Scarborough has been killing it. We're going to put all of our eggs in his basket. He gets hurt. We don't know how to respond.
Yeah,
you know, there's scenarios where it could have really benefited Alabama to have that. There's been times where they come out of the bye week and not perform great. LSU being one of them. So, I mean, it's not like it's guaranteed, but I just thought that was interesting and worth bringing up at least.
Well, I hope y'all enjoyed another two-parter with Clint and I on the on the Bama Beat podcast. And as a programming update, we will continue doing the podcast in the 3 weeks before the bowl game in Orlando. We'll probably have an episode in the near future where we do nothing but really dive in on the Alabama-Michigan matchup. Maybe go by position by position or statistically yes. inclined or whatever. There's going to be plenty of time. And by the way, we're only 67 days away from opening day of baseball, college baseball.
Which, you know,
I'm hype.
And I'm excited to get Edwin in here.
For softball.
Stanton, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
And Hunter and Cecil are doing the basketball thing. So.
Which is phenomenal. Probably one of my favorite episodes to listen to every week.
We're going to keep coming to you on the Bama Beat podcast. And I'll tell you this, I'm waiting on the day for our next podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just hope that. Was that another John Mayer reference? Was it?
Yes, sir.
Man, I'm not catching them. And you give me the look, and I'm like, there's something behind what you just said.
Do you know the album that was on?
No.
I believe it was on Born and Raised. I'm gonna double check myself.
Well, I'm a huge John Mayer fan. I'll be honest, by far my favorite artist. And I'm ashamed that I don't know. You know, I'm a huge Continuum fan. I'm a huge Trio fan. I saw John
Mayer. It was on Paradise Valley. Dang, I was.
See, his last couple albums I've not paid enough attention to. Carry Me Away, I thought it was a phenomenal single. I've enjoyed that, but I got to see him with Dead & Company when he was playing with them live. I've not seen him, you know, John Mayer, just John Mayer.
The only time I've seen him live was, I've seen, great grammar, Brett. I saw him when he was at the Tuscaloosa Amphitheater. That had to have been like 2000, what, 12?
I'm 13, jealous. Maybe. I'm a huge fan. So when I got a chance to make just a few harmless puns on Twitter, Brett decided to take it and run with it and do way better than me, and it's been upsetting. But
well, look, man, we got a few weeks to go to war.
Oh, I'm coming prepared next week. I'm gonna hit you with everything. I'm gonna be.
So now that we've gone through all this, I can tell you I do have a list of every John Mayer song, or at least all the ones on the album and the non-covers on the Where the Light Is live show in L.A.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Great show. Oh,
great
I'm
show.
I'm going to be busting out some of the old stuff, too. Some of the stuff before you.
I've got that list, and I've been marking off all the ones that I referenced, including that opening dialogue and then the ones I've worked in between. So my goal, I don't know if I'm going to be able to get it all done before the bowl game, but I'd like to do almost all of these by the after bowl game recap pod. I think I can do it. It's a lot, man.
It is a lot.
It's a lot.
A man's been throwing down some tracks.
I think I can get at least 75% of his entire discography referenced on the podcast between now and at the end of the podcast after the Citrus Bowl. I think I can do it.
And I wonder if we
and it's not going to be overly clunky either. Some of these have been
very flawed. Like that last one, you had to give me the look for. I was like, wait a minute, something's off with that statement.
Yeah.
I wonder, and guys that are, who are listening, you know what? If you catch one, maybe we don't point out the fact that it was a pun. See, some of them we will, but some of them we'll see if people can actually catch it and say, hey, notice he slid that in there. Well done. If for all you John Mayer fans out there, don't know about how many there are that listen to this podcast. I know, it used to not be cool to listen to John Mayer back in the Your Body Is a Wonderland days. I got into him back then, and I've loved him ever since. Well, thank God he, you know, that's not lame anymore.
Well, look, if nothing else, I'll definitely be able to get all these references in by St. Patrick's Day.
Dude, come on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, like Brett said, we're going to be coming at you guys with a lot more episodes leading up to the bowl game. There will continue to be stuff afterwards. We'll be doing, man, declaration, you know, players leaving early for the NFL. We'll be doing pods on them. We'll be doing pods on combine performances, pro days, position by position breakdowns heading into spring practice reports, post spring, you know, summer, you know, once we hit that lull between spring practice and the start of fall camp, more position by position breakdowns based off of things that have transpired, newcomers, recruiting coverage.
Early signing day is in a couple weeks.
So, guys, we're going to just, I mean, this whole football podcasting thing, despite the fact that it's about to be the offseason, we're going to continue to roll out plenty of content.
I've actually been kind of slowly working on our signing day capsules for the live blog that we're going to do on Tide Sports. sports.com.
I'm pumped about that, by the way.
On signing day, yeah, I've been kind of slowly working on that. So we're getting prepared for that. You could say the podcast is going to reach a crossroads.
We're done. All right. Thank you guys so much for tuning in to today's episode of the Bama Beat Podcast, brought to you by Zaxby's and Wickles. This has been your host, Clint Lamb, sitting here with Brett Hudson and his John Mayer puns.